When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Testaverde will take the snap, go to one knee. This game is over. The Jets lock up their first playoff appearance since 1991 on a 21-16 victory over the Miami Dolphins.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
Call his wife in. Hey, 4:05 on this Wednesday morning, the morning after the first game of the Subway Series, as the Mets took care of the Yankees 3-2. The Yankees put forth a miserable offense that everyone hated the second they saw the lineup. McNeil with a monster two-run shot. You just heard Howie Rose on the call during the update. That changed the game. It was enough for the Met team and their bullpen, who came in and did a great job and shut down the New York Yankees. And Cole on the mound later today is going to have to pitch an enormous game because the Yankees cannot be swept by the New York Mets. Sure they can. We'll get back to the baseball. We did a lot of that over the first 2 hours. I do want to just touch on the football a little bit, as obviously news broke earlier today. Hassan Reddick did not show up for Jets camp, which I guess came as a shock to the New York Jets, who, I mean, it's just been a frustrating thing for them, and they're catching it on both ends. This is what I talk about with the Jets, that they can't catch a break, and everybody's, why would you trade for a guy you knew he wasn't going to give a contract to? Oh, you talked to him. Oh, whether you were lied to, you're supposed to believe him. Like, it's always the Jets. It's always the Jets' fault. And right now, it's just, it's frustrating because to have this guy come in, they obviously decide not to get Huff. They trade with the Eagles to get Hassan Reddick, who is third in sacks in the NFL over the last handful of years. You know the stats and how talented he is, and you knew he did want a contract, but apparently the Jets were told from Hassan Reddick's camp that he is going to show up to all team events. They're expecting some sort of, you know, contract negotiations, but they expect him to be there. And obviously they were taken aback earlier when he didn't show up to OTAs, and now clearly on holdout trying to get a contract. Apparently now the reports are that they tried to offer him a contract and work with him before this holdout, but the Jets don't have interest in negotiating with a player who's not going to show up and is holding out. So, I mean, it's a mess. It's unfortunate. And for me, I mean, in my mind, typically when these things happen, especially for a Jets team that is all in, a Jets team that needs to win this year, a GM who needs to win this year, a head coach who needs to win this year, a team that needs to, at least at the bare minimum, you know, make the playoffs for the first time in 13 years and break this ridiculous streak that not only, you know, covers the NFL, but all of professional sports. It has to stop. I mean, for me, it just feels like in this situation, in most situations when it's hold out, the player has most of the leverage here. I know he's missing, you know, he's getting fined $50,000 a day. It's a ton of money. It's a lot of money. I get it. You know, maybe if, you know, certain guys step up and Cam McDonald or others with the Jets, you know, show some ability, the Jets could push it down the line a little bit. But I find it very hard to believe that they're not going to give him a contract. I mean, typically when you see these guys, players hold out, it would be embarrassing. The Jets made this trade. They knew he was looking for a new contract. Whatever they were told, wherever they were misled, whatever, you know, message was sent by his camp, his agent, whatever. It's just whenever he decided to hold out, I just feel like he's got most of the leverage. The Jets just can't afford to let this thing linger. And listen, the defense is their strong suit. They should be good defensively, but they still need a pass rush. They need Hassan Reddick. They traded for him. They need him. And to start camp like this on a season that, you know, you're tired of all this nonsense, whether it's the Jets' fault or not, you're just tired of constantly having to deal with something. It's always something. It's Rodgers in Egypt. It's Rodgers getting hurt. It's whatever's going on. It's now you got to deal with Hard Knocks, the uniform tweets from the owner. Like, whatever the case may be, it's just, it always appears to be something. Nothing's ever smooth. And this year just needs to be smooth, man. Whether it's Hackett getting called out by Peyton at the start of the year, like there's just always, so even if it's not their fault, there's always surrounding noise around this Jet team. And this year needs to be smooth sailing. This year has to be the year where everything comes together. And, you know, it's a story. Rodgers showed up to camp. I don't know why. I don't know why I saw a headline. Aaron Rodgers reports to camp. I mean, did anybody doubt he was going to report to camp? He showed up wearing an Egyptian cat T-shirt just to mess with everyone. You got to love this guy. You got to love him. You got to love Rodgers, or at least put up with him. One or the other. But, I mean, in my mind, I just feel like this is too big a spot, too important a player, and would be too embarrassing for the Jets, and just another distraction not to go out there and give him a contract that you knew you were going to have to give him at some point, and we'll see, you know, what he's asking for. But it sounds like right now the game of chicken will begin. $50,000 a day. He wants a contract. They were under the understanding that they would work on a contract as long as he was reporting. And now he's not reporting. And the Jets don't have any interest in negotiating with someone who's not there. Here we go. Here we go. And in my mind, if we're going to have a game of chicken, it's going to be really hard for the Jets not to be the one to get to blink first. Because they can't have turmoil throughout camp. They need him in here. They need him healthy. They need him going. Now, you know, he's an edge rusher. He doesn't have to play every single down. He's a guy who, I don't know how much it hurts. He's a veteran. He pins his ear back and goes after the quarterback. As you heard, when the Eagles traded him, they had some issues with him because he was sack happy. Well, I mean, I hope so. So I don't know what kind of, you know, how much he hurts his ability, but we've seen, I know it's a different sport, but even in baseball this year, all the pitchers and players who signed late and missed camp got off to miserable starts for the most part, almost exclusively. You don't want to miss time. You don't want to be away from the team, especially a new team just coming here. You want them in camp. You want things running smooth. You don't want the distraction. You don't want to have you guys answering these questions. You want to just go about this year because it's the most important year the Jets have had in forever. And it's going to start with this nonsense. And then you get to Hard Knocks and the New York Giants, and you saw everything in that. You saw all of it. And I got to say this. Again, I've talked about how much I've really appreciated Hard Knocks, how much better it is than I thought it would be. And I got to say, the Giants as well, they allowed a lot. I mean, I don't know what else. Now, they didn't show, like early on, you saw a conversation between Joe Shane and the owner, John Mara, who was in this a lot. This episode, just kind of aimlessly wandering around, walking into rooms going, what's up? Which was just, you know, interesting to watch. But he's having a conversation with Joe Shane, and Joe Shane recaps a conversation he had with Daniel Jones, and it wasn't shown. That's the only thing. I wish it would have been shown, but I don't know if they had a chance to film it, but he talked about the idea that they were looking to trade up, and that it was a very viable option that they were going to end up with a quarterback in the draft, and Daniel's just got to understand it because of the injury history and the way he played in the first six games before the injury and the ability to get out of the contract. Like, they had a frank conversation with him and told him, hey, look, we're trying to trade up, and if you watch it, I mean, there is no doubt in my mind. They can say whatever. At the end, when they established they were going to get Neighbors or they were going to get Harrison Junior, and that was it. And after that, there was a bunch of trade scenarios. It was fascinating. It was fascinating to hear them say and go over the meeting that pretty much once it came to the draft and they exhausted all their options of trading for a quarterback, which they tried up until the day of. They called the Patriots and said, hey, again, what are we thinking here? What do we want to do? And the Patriots told them that we're probably just going to sit back and take the pick. And from that moment on, that's when they finally just said, okay, we got to get Daniel Jones a weapon. And in that conversation, they said, all right, so this is what we'll do. We're going to get either Neighbors or Harrison. If not, there's some trade scenarios moving back. They thought they could still get Adunze. moving back if both Neighbors and Harrison were off the board at 4-5. It was just fascinating to see them go through their process. But you could see on Dable's face. You could see it when they talked about trading up. You could see it. And that's why I'm frustrated. And I know, you know, a lot of Giant fans get on me, and I was rooting for losses in the middle of the year. I think this proves it, man. Like, I'm sorry. I feel vindicated. Watching this shows you exactly why. You can talk about what a fan is. You can talk about how important wins are in the NFL. Tell me again it was important to beat New England and be behind them in the draft when the coach is, when the GM is desperately trying to move up and get that pick to change the franchise. The coach, his mouth is watering for a quarterback and talking about trading up for a quarterback. Tell me again how it was more important to win that meaningless game against New England. Because I just don't understand it. I'm sorry. It's about what's best for the franchise. And as I sit there and watch Joe Shane on the phone, who I think has come off great in this, when I watch him on the phone and his mind, and he's literally saying, I can't take this anymore. My mind is so bent on moving up in the draft. It's taking up all my time and all my thoughts. I'm going to need to move on. I need an answer now because I can't take this anymore. As I watch the Giants and their coach and their GM and talking about the honest, obvious situation they have currently going on with their current quarterback and their desperate desire to move up, I can't help but think back to the season and when they won stupid, meaningless games. And as they go over all the different quarterbacks who found, they had the same conversation we have here all the time and on social media about all the different misses at the quarterback position. Joe Shane even says top three hit better. And we've seen it here for Jet fans. Like, honestly, Fliegelman knows. I know he's with me on this. He could not believe that they lost to the Rams and got Zach Wilson. I mean, excuse me, beat the Rams and got Zach Wilson instead of Trevor Lawrence. And that's my takeaway from this episode. Yes, the explaining and going over the board with the owners and talking about how, listen, they were in on Neighbors. You even had the wide receiver coach tell the owner, and this is going to be a moment that's probably going to be talked about a lot, and especially as the season gets started, because I think the Giants have come off pretty smart, but there was one thing here where the wide receiver coach literally said he would take Neighbors over Harrison Jr. I don't think anyone feels that way. And I mean, Marvin Harrison is going to be an absolute stud. He is a tremendous player, and he's without question, I mean, you never know. I shouldn't say without question. But he was perceived without question by almost everyone in the sport as the top wide receiver in the NFL draft. And maybe it's a little bit of showmanship. Maybe it's a little telling the owner what he wants to hear because you know Harrison's not going to be there. But the Giants clearly love Neighbors. They were praying, please, Neighbors, be there once they couldn't get the quarterback. But plan A was to get a new quarterback. Plan B was to give the current quarterback weapons. And I just couldn't help but watch it and focus on the idea of stupid victories against Green Bay. Stupid victories. I mean, like, oh, what a great night that was, right? What a great night. They beat Green Bay on a Monday night. Oh, quarterback made a name for himself. He's out there selling pasta sauce. Oh, it's great. It's great. They went to the playoffs and won a couple of games, and the Giants went home, and it cost them the ability to draft the quarterback they desperately wanted. Frustrating stuff, as well as the New York Yankees being extremely frustrating. 888-808-1019. The only team you feel pretty good about right now is the New York Mets, who have now, and the Knicks, clearly. That's true. You feel pretty damn good about the Knicks. But that's too far away. The Mets are playing now. The Giants and Jets are reporting. You got issues with the Jets, although I am pretty confident in the New York Jets. And, of course, the Giants will see what they become with their quarterback situation and their running back situation. But the Mets right now, they've taken the first three. They are looking for the sweep later tonight. Jeff McNeil with an enormous home run. He's hit four since the All-Star break, turning his season around, becoming a real threat. The Mets make mistakes. Sure, the Mets make mistakes. Jeff McNeil made a mistake, not scoring on a ball off the wall from second base. Nunez drops a ball at first base on an easy out to allow Grisham to get on base for the beginning of the inning. But ultimately, their bullpen came through. They pitched around Judge brilliantly and just walked him and let J.D. Davis strike out and hit into double plays. As the Yankees embarrassed themselves with the lineup they put forth before the game, they embarrassed themselves with that lineup performing in the game, and ultimately they embarrassed themselves as we had to watch the best hitter in baseball be, you know, completely undercut by who's behind him and no reason to challenge him until the end when Diekman came in without with Diaz being unavailable and struck him out looking. Just an all-around awful night for the Yankees, a tremendous night for the Mets. And, of course, the football angles, which we just discussed. That's what we got here for the last 40 minutes or so. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Let's get to Rocco in Saratoga. Rocco, what's up?
How you doing, C-Mac?
Yeah,
you're not all right. The Yanks lost. Don't tell me that.
Yeah,
I know.
See, I'm old school,
C-Mac. I'm a Mets and a Yankees fan. It was a good game. It was a good game, but, you know, I'm not pulling for either team. I just want them to both do well, and it's baseball. It's a baseball game. At least it wasn't a blowout. It was a good game, entertaining to the very end. This Diekman guy, who the heck is he? I mean,
who's Diekman? He's a somewhat rather ineffective reliever who came in and shut the door on the Yankees. That's who he is.
Oh, you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it last night.
No, you would not. No, you would not.
Yeah, I was like, oh man, Judge is up. This is going to be exciting, man. Is he going to power that one out? No, he looks at the pitch, strike.
Well, I mean, that's the problem. Yeah. The problem is not only is he being pitched around, but when he's pitched to, he's not sure he's being pitched around. Because why would you pitch to him? And he's been getting, you know, I think he saw two strikes and 14 pitches in the previous four at bats, and then he comes up for his fifth at bat with you know, a runner on in the ninth, thinking, why the hell am I going to be pitched to? So he takes a fastball down the middle to start the at-bat, and then with two strikes, without it being a full count, he's not expecting anything near the plate. And he takes a fastball in the corner, on the inside corner. It was a brilliant pitch by Diekman. It was a smart move to go after him, I guess, and not put the tying run on second base. But, I mean, that's not only is he being pitched to, but he has to wonder, and it's in the back of his mind if he's being pitched to. They need to improve. I mean, July 30th can't come fast enough. Danny and Belrose, what's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. What's going on?
Good morning. How are you, sir?
Not bad. How about you?
I could be better. I was at that miserable game last night. It was very frustrating to watch that offense continue to be anemic, especially runners in scoring position. It was pretty frustrating to watch J.D. Davis hit cleanup and swing a curveball in the dirt after curveball in the dirt. When he wasn't doing that, hitting into double plays. So it was not my favorite night. Plus, I took the I took the subway there and back, and the subway on the way home was, I mean, first of all, you knew I was going to do it. I knew I was going to do it. It was 1,000 degrees, even though it was much cooler tonight than it's been during this heat wave. The subway system is still 1,000 degrees. And I get off the 4 train at Grand Concourse, go downstairs to get on the 2 train, waiting. As soon as I walk downstairs, I knew it. I look up 15 minutes for the next train. And I'm sitting there, and it's 100 miles an hour. I'm sweating like crazy, and it's disgusting. I'm just sweating all over the place. And because I had to dress nice, I have a heavy polo on. I have jeans on. I should be in shorts and a T-shirt. Normally, I walk in here shorts and a T-shirt. I don't even put socks on. And it's like, now I'm in this heavy polo. I'm wearing jeans. I'm sweating my you-know-what's off. And I, like an idiot, I go and I wipe my face, the sweat off my face, like pretty, you know, I give it like a good thing, a good like wipe off with my shirt. And I forgot all about the cut on my nose that won't stop. And there I am in the I ripped the scab off my nose. I'm sitting there. I'm standing there at the Grand Concourse waiting for the 149th Street, waiting for the 2 train, sweating and bleeding down my face without any more napkins or anything. And I'm trying to wipe the blood off. It was one of those moments where I was like, I wish I was anywhere else but here.
Yeah, this is why I don't take the train anymore. I sit at games. I drive in because you know what? I don't want to deal with the heat or the people or just in general.
I get it. But when I had to be here, it seems silly to like go to the game and try and find parking and or either pay for parking and then drive here. Like it just seemed easier to come here, leave the car here, and take the subway back and forth.
Yeah, I did the free parking. You know, last Saturday it was only $26 and. I had to walk, obviously, you know, 13 minutes, but it was worth it. I was going to pay $80 and park near when last year it was $40 to park near the stadium. It was crazy that they doubled the parking.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's crazy. It's for like anywhere near the stadium, it's like $43. The parking is ridiculous.
Yeah. So talk about tonight's game, last night's game. I mean, I like Gil. He did fine. You know, had a to me a quality start, but you know, obviously, Tonkin just wasn't his day. You know,
yeah.
gave up the two runs, kind of blew the game. But what can he do? And also look at the lineup. You know. It's kind of interesting how you were talking about yesterday. All these certain guys are not performing, and then the guys that don't normally perform got hit yesterday. So it's like you can't win, you know.
You're 100% right, and yeah, they need Volpe, Torres, and Verdugo. And Volpe had two hits. Torres had the home run, and Verdugo had the double in the gap that scored the second run of the game. Yeah, but yeah, the lineup is. Here's the thing with the lineup, and I talked about it in the open. You can go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app. My problem with we can complain about the lineup, and I did, and it sucks. And I get why I get why they put in Jones doesn't bother me as much as J.D. Davis. Jamai Jones is hitting 350 in a very small sample size. I get it, but they haven't had anyone who can hit lefties this entire 2 months. But yeah, the lineup sucked in going into it. But here's the problem: we're going to talk all week leading up to this stupid game. We're going to talk about the idea what Severino said: there's two good hitters in the lineup. Everyone else sucks. And oh, listen, Severino's right: two good hitters. That's all they have. The Yankees are two good hitters. The rest is garbage. Look, I've seen it a million times. A picture of the OPS of every player of the New York Yankees and the OPS plus and all the different stats, and all of them are below average. Every single freaking player in the New York Yankees, besides those two guys, are below average. It's nothing but garbage. It's two hitters and garbage. And then we're going to look at a game they lost, and we're going to say, well, it's because of the order of the garbage? Like, that's my only problem with the real anger and the focusing on the lineup. Yes, I didn't like the lineup. I hated it. I kind of understand on some level. You can explain to me why those two guys are in the lineup. J.D. Davis was brought here because he hits lefties. Why is he on the roster if he can't play in this game? Ben Rice, as much as we love him, God knows I do. I'm excited about what he can be. He's 4 for his last 44. The idea you can't play J.D. Davis for Ben Rice in one game against a lefty when he's on your team for this specific reason, otherwise he shouldn't be here, and Ben Rice is 4 for his last 44. The idea you can't put him in doesn't make sense to me. You can't hit him clean up. I understand. He hasn't played since July 4th. Can you put any? I put Gleyber Torres there. Put Volpe there. I agree. I hated hitting him fourth. I understand why he's in the lineup on some level, but I hated the lineup. But the lineup, the roster sucks. The team, the offense is garbage. You can't go all week and say the entire team is garbage. Severino told us that he's right. And then get mad of the order of the garbage. I don't know if there's anyone you could put behind Judge that's not going to get him walked. We've been talking about Judge being walked for the last 3 weeks when the lineup was what it was before this terrible lineup. We were still talking about walking Judge. The lineup sucked. I hated it, but I can't look at it and blame it when they haven't scored runs. Oh, but they scored 9 runs yesterday. Okay, yeah, they scored 9 runs one game. What happened in the 2 prior to that against Tampa Bay? This lineup's not scoring runs. This lineup's not hitting. And particularly against lefties, they're terrible. So the manager took a chance and played a kid who's hitting 350 and J.D. Davis, who was brought here because typically in his career he hits lefties. And it blew up in his face. What an awful night for Aaron Boone. What an awful, awful night. The three of them. And then, of course, he has Wells sit out, too, which is another thing that bothers me. He's got Wells for Nevarez. He did all of the moves all in one game to try and get right-handed hitters against a lefty. And not like, you know, Sandy Koufax or Randy Johnson. Quintana. That's the lefty that he had to throw every right-handed hitter in his lineup. I hate it too. But watching the game, when the game was on the line, they had those guys in there anyway. The team isn't good enough right now. The Mets are better. We can complain about the lineup all day long. The Mets are better, top to bottom, soup to nuts. any other, you know, cliches I can think of? Not at the moment. That's just the way it is. They're getting Stanton and Dominguez back, and they have the trade deadline in a couple of days. That's it. We're going to find out what the team is. The team we saw last night will not be the team in August, September, and October. But the team right now is just not good enough. And excuse me, as frustrated as I am by the lineup, if I'm not going to scream and cry and go nuts about which order they put the garbage in. Don and Dumont. What's up, Don?
Chris, thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy listening to you.
Thank you.
If I may, I'd like to make two Yankee points, and I got a Yankee question for you. First point is this, is that I am baffled the way they are playing right now. This is, there's no words for it. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
It's complete garbage, first of all. Second of all, if the season was the end today and they made it to the playoffs, they would just be embarrassed themselves right now if the season was the end today. And my question for you is this. Is it even possible to make trades to fix this lineup at this point in time? Because everyone's pointing out it's Judge and Soto, and that's it. And they need help everywhere. Can they even get the help that they need at this point?
Well, they're getting two guys back without trades. Dominguez is going to be here and Stanton's going to be here. Now, I don't know how long. Typically, Stanton takes a while. That's fair. Stanton takes a while to get going once back from injury, but he was having a very solid year, and he at least is somewhat of an imposing threat and has hit some home runs. Even when he's slumping, he'll occasionally drive the baseball out of the ballpark. So you got Stanton, and Dominguez. Yeah. Hold on. And then if you can get, you get one other piece at the deadline, but your point is this. They can't replace the whole lineup. If Volpe is not going to hit, they're not going to win. If Volpe, Torres, and Verdugo are all bad and continue to be what they've been for the last month, then no, there is not a trade deadline that can fix the lineup. There are guys coming back, and there are pieces they can add, but they will still need guys who have underperformed over the last month to get better.
In your opinion, we're talking about pieces to add. What would their top priority be right now in adding someone, in your opinion?
Third base.
And who do you think he's
specific?
Able to go after?
Yeah, I mean, Rengifo of the Angels just came back, and thank you for the call. Rengifo from the Angels just came back off the IL. He's hitting 300 this year and having a very nice season. Chapman in San Francisco having an up and down year, but you know, we know what kind of player he could be. Last year, Baltimore with Toronto, same thing. Incredible first half, miserable second half. If you got him, you'd hope that, you know how good defensively he is, and you hope he can get hot offensively. Jonathan India is a name that's been bandied about. Paredes of Tampa Bay. I am a little leery of trading for guys from Tampa Bay because they seem to win every single freaking trade they make. But those are the names. Those are the names. McMahon out of Colorado is off the table. At least that's what they're saying. That's what he's been told by the Rockies. It looks like they're not trading him. Those are the names. Rengifo, India, Paredes, maybe Chapman. Those are the names. And none of them sound like world beaters, but they can come in and be certainly better than LeMahieu has been. And maybe you get two of those guys. They're going to make a bunch of trades. In 2022, they were in this position, right? They were a floundering team off a great start, still in playoff position, and they went out there and they made four trades. I think five, including getting rid of Gallo, but that didn't really help the team. But they went out there and made trades. Now, again, doesn't mean they'll be good. Those were all Benintendi got hurt. Montas was hurt and terrible. Bader was in a boot and helped them in the postseason. But, they made a bunch of moves. Cashman is going to make a bunch of moves. It might be a disaster like it was 2 years ago, or it might help them. I don't know. But the team they are presently giving you will not be the team in August, September, and October. And we'll have to see whether that team's good enough. But here's what I'll say. They are still 17 games over 500. They are still securely in the first wild card. And despite the fact they've been the worst team in baseball practically for the last 2 months, the Baltimore Orioles have only been able to gain a game and a half. That's the lead, a game and a half. Some tweaks, some changes, some additions, some guys coming back from injury, and hopefully a couple of guys getting more like the players they were in the first 2 months of the year than what they've been for the last month is what we're hanging on to. But right now, a lot of ifs.
We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan, 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 4:38, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I got you for another 22 minutes or so until the warm-up show comes your way. Let's get right to the calls. You guys are all lined up, and I've talked enough. Kevin and Elmont, what's up, Kev?
What's up, Cap?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, my man? I hope you enjoyed your vacation. But first, two quick things. It's time now that the Yankees lead off Judge and bat Soto. You bat in third with knocking 100 runs. I saw you in that softball game. You could swing the bat. Now, last week, Chris.
Good.
Can I just say one more thing? But last week, did you see Hulk Hogan's speech? That was unbelievable.
I did see Hulk Hogan's speech. I saw him. I didn't watch the entire speech, but I saw the clips. I saw him rip his shirt off. You know, you gotta love the Hulkster, man. Gotta love the Hulkster.
I was there when he beat the Sheik, and I was a young guy. I know you were probably just a kid.
I grew up, born in 83. I mean, I grew up loving Hulk Hogan. Right. He was like my first guy.
Right. You were the Hulkamaniac.
I was a Hulkamaniac. Right? I took my vitamins and I drank my milk. I was a Hulkamaniac.
Right. And the thing is, you know what's forgotten in that thing? Sergeant Slaughter was a big part of that, like, you know, the Sheen and the Hulk and all that.
Well, sure, yeah. No, the WrestleMania with the backdrop of the war and everything. It was. I mean, I was too young to get all of the, you know, get exactly what they were doing. I just knew I wanted Hulk to win. That's all I cared about. I hated Sergeant Slaughter. I hated all of them. I hated everyone who got in his way. I was a huge, huge Hulk Hogan fan. But your idea about hitting Judge in front of Soto. I mentioned this before a couple of weeks ago. It's not the craziest idea. It's really not. It's really not that crazy because the walk is so much a part of Soto's game anyway. And as much as he's, you know, just as good and the OPSs are close, but he's not as just dangerous a hitter. And I don't think he'll be walked as much. But a walk is like so much of a part of his game. That I don't hit on base percentage is his thing, that it doesn't bother me as much to see him walk and the bat taken out of his hand as opposed to Judge's hand. But I mean, they got to get the guys better behind him ultimately. And I would lead off. I'm at the point right now where I would just put them both 1-2. I would say, screw it. Forget everything else. I want my two best hitters having the most at bats. Forget everything else. Just put Soto. I'm even going to get away from trying to get a guy hot in the middle. My plan for the lineup was Soto 1, Judge 3, whoever I want to get fastballs in between them, and try and either capitalize on a guy who's hot or try and turn a guy who's cold hot, like put Glaber there or put Verdugo there and try and see if I can get them hot, you know, with Soto on base in front of him and Judge behind him and get him fastballs. I don't even know if I'm there anymore. Seriously, until the trade deadline, Soto 1, Judge 2. I don't care. Just give me, I want them up the most. Tony in Staten Island, what's up, Tony?
Hey, my only hope right now is that Aaron Boone is listening to the show because that's where he seems to get most of his ideas on matching, off the radio.
From the radio? Yeah, maybe.
Well, I heard the other day he might have switched his number 4 spot because he heard somebody talking about it on the radio. But anyway, it really does enlighten me when I look around at baseball and I look at Carlos Mendoza and I look at Rob Thompson. Both coming out of the Yankee organization, both being passed over. Yeah. And we're going to sit with Aaron Boone for 10 years now of really basically underachieving for the teams that he has had in the past. Maybe now the team might be a little bit worse. But I also read a little anecdote yesterday in the paper. Back in 98, when they lost their first games, Joe Torre ripped into them in the clubhouse.
He had a meeting.
All right. Can Aaron Boone, in his own mind, ever conceivably call out a player even behind closed doors?
How do you know
he
doesn't?
The problem with the Yankees is there's no urgency. There's no accountability. They make errors in the field. They run the bases horrifically. The fundamentals that little leaguers do not make, this team cannot make fundamental plays.
All right,
little leaguers play better baseball.
All right, well, here's the thing. One, you literally said...
No, it's making me sick right now.
I know, but you said behind closed doors. Do you have supervision? How the hell do you know what happens behind closed doors?
I don't know what happens, but I don't know that it would leak out. Well, it would get out into the public.
Yeah, you know how that leaked out into
the
public?
How did Joe Torre get out?
Because he wrote a book and told everybody.
Oh, so wait for Aaron Raboon to write a book on the Yankees
We don't know what happens behind closed doors. He's not going to kill them publicly. And honestly,
is Mendoza proving he's a better manager than Boone right now? Has Rob Thompson proven he's a better manager?
No. One went to the World Series, sure, I'll give you that. And then he lost when he was up 3-1 to the Arizona Diamondbacks.
He's overachieving with a weak Mets team.
Who's
can you imagine what he's doing with the Yankees?
The Mets lineup is far better than what the Yankees are presenting.
Aaron
Boone is
third-generation baseball. Third generation. Does a guy ever make a move based on feel and not analytics? Please, stop defending Aaron Boone until he does something defendable.
No, he's done plenty defendable. Look at 2019 when he lost every single player on the team and he still won 100-plus games. I mean, look at the lineup right now. Look at the team. You just say these things. You don't know any. Does he ever lay into anyone? No. You want to say Mendoza? Oh, the Yankees have terrible base running. What happened last night for the Mets? A guy from second didn't score a ball off the wall, and in the ninth inning with a runner already in scoring position, he got picked off going to third. How's that for base running? How was that? But the Mets won the game, so no one gives a damn. But how's that for fundamentals and Mendoza? Did he drag Bader off the field by the ear? What did he say in the postgame? I missed it. Did he say Bader's the worst base runner on the team and I'm benching him tomorrow? Joe Torre got on. They just had BT just had on David Wells. He's the only player in the history of his tenure with the Yankees that he publicly got on. And yeah, he had a meeting after 1998. Yes, absolutely. After the start of the season, 100%. We don't know what meetings have gone on. We don't know. They haven't played well. Look at the slop the team has. This same team, Verdugo, Volpe, LeMahieu, the same team was the first team to win 50 games. They did that despite him. And now they're struggling because of him. That's where I have a problem. I'm not telling you he's Miller Huggins or he's the greatest manager in the world. But we get like you literally just said Mendoza's managing circles around him. The Mets made more mistakes than the Yankees did. The Mets dropped a ball at first base. The Mets didn't score on a ball off the wall from second base and got picked off in the ninth trying to take third. Where's the fundamentals? McNeil hit a two-run home run. Glaber hit a solo home run. That's the difference in the game.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
And the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
And, you know, the conversation about the Yankee urgency I get. At the beginning of the year, they showed it. I thought that was the difference in the team, the urgency they showed at the beginning of the year. They were playing their guys every day. Grisham never played. Jones was, I didn't even know he was on the team. Even Judge wouldn't get the multiple days off. Like, they played with urgency. And that's partly lacking, I suppose. I'm open to that, but everyone, they can't hit. I mean, everyone on the team has gone completely in the tank except for two players. That's the problem, more than the urgency. I'm open to urgency being an issue, open to it. The problem is the roster isn't very good right now, and guys need to get better, and they need help. And speaking of urgency, the one thing I'll say about the, and coaches specifically with urgency, the one thing I'll say about watching Hard Knocks too was, I love Brian Daboll, but maybe a little urgency from him. I mean, he literally, is he allowed to sit on a couch without putting his feet up? I mean, because I don't know if you saw this, but like Jaden Daniels walks into the room for his meeting with Shane and Daboll, and he literally asks him if he's willing to come to New York. He's like, hey, first off, would you want to be here? You want to be the quarterback of the New York Giants? And he's doing it with his feet on the coffee table. Like, it was just like, can you, sit up a bit? The whole every time he's in the meeting before the draft in a suit talking to John Mara and Steve Tisch, and he's got his feet on the coffee table. Like, it's a man who likes to be comfortable. I get it. John in Belmore, what's up, John?
Hey, what's going on, D-Mac? Big fan.
Oh, thank you, buddy. What's up?
No, I just wanted to get into it. I haven't been watching the Hard Knocks. I can't even, I don't know. I'm a Giants fan. I can't even imagine them on HBO Hard Knocks thing. But going back.
Let me just say, I'll let you finish, but if you're a Giant fan, we don't have to get into it. I would watch it. I think it's really fascinating and fun to watch.
It feels theater sometimes, you know, sometimes, yeah, right? He's got speed up on the thing. I don't know. But what was I going to say? Yeah, it's about time they got him a weapon. You know, this guy has been playing with nothing. I know he's had Saquon, but Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton was okay at Auburn. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Come on.
No, this is the
it's
first
about time they got him a top guy.
This is the first top level number one wide receiver, assuming that's what he is, and hopefully that's what he is. No doubt the wide receiver room has not been great, but. You know how I feel, and the offensive line hasn't been great. All true. It hasn't been so bad that they can't ever score points or ever throw a touchdown to a wide receiver. Like I do think, and plus there's the injury issue. There's a level, like we've seen other guys elevate. Like I'm telling you right, if Tank Dell and Nico Collins were on the Giants, we wouldn't be talking about them the same way we were when Stroud took over. Like they'd be two guys who are ineffective. I'm telling you, that's how I feel. But you're
but
I won't disagree that clearly this will be the first time he has a legitimate number one weapon at wide receiver. He's going to lose the weapon as far as game breaking ability with Saquon Barkley, but this is no doubt the first time he's had a real number one weapon. But again, I saw Tyrod Taylor come in and make Hyatt look like more of a weapon than Daniel Jones did in the first six games. We've seen it before. And that's pretty much my thing with Daniel Jones. We've just seen it before. I don't know how many times we can keep asking the question of what is Daniel Jones? It's just the same question over and over again. Daniel Jones is the embodiment of my son asking me, are we there yet, in a car ride. Daniel Jones is the are we there yet of the NFL. It's just over and over again the same question. Is he the guy? The year of Daniel Jones. Are we there yet? Dad, are we there yet? That's Daniel Jones. Right, Brett? What's up, man? Brett in Long Island. What's going on?
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I didn't
know Hulk Hogan was your first guy. That's interesting.
He was my first
Chris,
guy.
Before we get to Daniel Jones, I just wanted to touch on your weakest current argument right now.
Sure. What do I got?
Ridiculous.
Yep.
Aaron Boone.
Yes.
You keep saying about how great the Yankees were in what, April, May, the best team. You're using that. And then now that, you know, they've been the worst team.
Yep.
You know, so to me, that's the argument the other way. Usually, like you said, you even brought it up. Joe Torre, he had that one year. They were started off 18-28.
Correct.
And turned the season around.
Right.
That, to me, is the gauge. So, like, I would stop saying that because, like, when he was doing great, we were all like, all right, yeah, Aaron Boone looks great. Like, he's doing a good job.
Nobody was.
All the troops going.
No, nobody
and
was.
Now they're terrible. I would stop the argument. It sounds silly.
Well, okay. No, well, I'm just saying that there was a good Yankee team and a bad Yankee team. The good Yankee team, the manager got
zero. Yeah, there was a good Yankee manager and a bad Yankee manager. I agree.
No, I don't think so. I think it's the same manager, and the players played well, and the players don't. I'm not giving Aaron Boone.
When the players are doing good, yeah, he gets credit. They're doing bad.
I'm not giving Boone a lot of credit for the start of the year that much. I mean, it's about the players. I don't think he's a better manager or worse manager. I think on some level, it's on the manager to try to get them in the right frame of mind to turn around losing streaks. And for far too long, it's gone on for far too long. This year, 2022, that's on him. And some of the attitude, I hated some of the comments.
The worst team in baseball, you got to blame the manager to some degree.
I do blame the manager to some degree.
Don't defend him with that argument. Don't do it. That sounds silly.
But I'm just saying, if you're gonna blame the manager, then let's start giving him credit when he wins. That's all I'm saying.
I did. That's what I'm saying.
All right, I don't think many people did.
I'm changing on Aaron Boone. Okay.
You might have. I don't think many people did.
Okay, he's doing good. Oh, I don't know about that. I think people were some.
No, I don't think anyone gave him any credit for the start of the year. No.
All right. Well, then if that's the argument, but I just want to finish with Daniel Jones.
Yeah, please.
I think it's ironic how the same people that are saying us, oh, watch Saquon Barkley behind a good offensive line, how good he's going to be, the best runner. Those same people said they want Daniel Jones out, that he had no offensive line. How does that work? I don't get that. You know, okay for Saquon, they make excuses with the line, but not Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one of those people, but I understand you're saying, yeah. I mean, Saquon Barkley, Saquon Barkley has shown a lot more ability than Daniel Jones has. Saquon Barkley, despite, you know, was a rookie.
He was an
offensive rookie of the year. You know, he had games where he was dominant. Daniel Jones had one game where he was dominant in the playoffs. And granted, he did. It was a great game, Minnesota.
And he had a clean season, too. Stop with the one game against the bad Minnesota. He had a clean season.
He had a clean season, and he was
so clean that he helped with his legs, and he didn't turn the ball.
But he didn't turn the ball over. Did he score points?
Yeah, but there's formulas.
Did he throw
to that,
touchdowns? Did you watch Hard Knocks, and do you think the coach wants a different quarterback?
Chris, 1-0 me. Have a good day, buddy.
Yeah, okay, if you say so. I say it's probably like 35-0 me, but that's okay. You tell me. Watch Hard Knocks. Tell me what the coach wants. If the coach wants Daniel Jones to be his quarterback or he desperately wanted one of these young kids, you ask me. You go watch and you tell me which one he wanted. And just... I hear people say this, and then I hear people say that, and it doesn't make any sense. 1-0 me. Good call, Brett. All right, thank you, guys. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock after another Subway Series game. Hopefully, Gerrit Cole can pitch them to a victory. Or for you Mets fans, maybe not. I'll see you tomorrow at 2 a.m.